Chapter 5. The Fellowship. Notes. All the usual warnings from the show's canon carry over, including but not limited to internalized homophobia, use of the F-slur in reference to oneself, hand-wavy medical diagnosis, though I did research spinal fractures and those are gnarly as hell, language, descriptions of gore, brief reference to drug use, etc. Eddie thinks he's probably dead, but when he opens his eyes, he's not. Both of his sides are bracketed with dogs. Wolves. Dustin and Steve. Strider. His body burns, aches, feels raw and fragile. Different. The wolf on one side of him lifts its head, nosing Eddie's cheek. Safe. Hurt. Pack. It's less that he hears it and more that he feels it inside his head, which makes him dizzy and lightheaded. The other wolf noses him too. This time, the thoughts, feelings are questions and not reassurances. Hurt. Home? Everything feels simple, almost one-dimensional in his brain. There aren't any complex thoughts, really. It hits Eddie suddenly. He's a wolf. Holy shit. Stay. Strider pushes the idea at him. Stay. One of the wolves gets up, running down the road toward the trailer park. The other wolf, Dustin, noses Eddie's sides and his neck. When Strider returns, he's carrying jeans and a t-shirt in his mouth. He drops them between two other piles of clothes. Eddie has no idea how to shift back, though. Doesn't know how he shifted in the first place. Isn't even actually sure how he's a wolf at all. There's that sound of the rope pulling against a knot again, and Steve's human form seems like it turns out of the wolf form. Like a reversible stuffed animal or jacket. Like the wolf is still there, just on the inside now. Eddie shakes his head, which feels weird because it's not head-shaped anymore. It's wolf-shaped. Yeah, no, he's not gonna deal with that right now. His brain doesn't really have the capacity in this form. Or any form, really. Also, Steve's naked. And it just goes to show what a bad day Eddie's having that he can't even appreciate that right now. Or maybe he doesn't care in this form. Like, it's not even important. Steve pulls his pants out of the pile, yanking them on. You next. Eddie tilts his head in confusion. How? But he knows instinctively that Steve won't feel the thought. There are words that Steve is saying, but it's too much. They're too big to comprehend right now. Eddie looks at Dustin, who sends, pull, and the idea of stretching his body too far. He tries, stretching, but pulling at the same time somehow. It feels like his ears pop, but from head to toe, and suddenly Eddie is very aware that he is naked and sitting in the street surrounded by 100 prone bats, Dustin and Steve Harrington. Holy shit. He's a fucking shapeshifter. He looks up, but Steve must have turned around to give him privacy and pulled Dustin's wolf with him so they've got their backs to him. Dragging his own clothes into his lap, Eddie realizes that they're upside-down versions. But he's now a product of the upside-down, so it probably won't hurt him to go commando in them, right? He swallows a manic giggle at that. After he's dressed in two tight jeans and a rush shirt, because 17-year-old Eddie was a tall but scrawny dork who had less discerning musical tastes, and Tom Sawyer had a killer guitar part that he can still play from memory, he and Steve turn around to afford Dustin the same courtesy. Steve bumps his shoulder against Eddie's. Is it as metal as you thought it would be? Eddie's nervous laugh is high and brittle because, holy fuck, he's a fucking shape-shifting wolf now. And he's not dead. He can feel the strings connecting him to Dustin and Steve, plus the others tethering off. He feels Mike out west somewhere. Feels Lucas. Where's Max? They have to sneak Eddie into the hospital because, after all of this bullshit, he's still a wanted man. He'd almost forgotten. They spend all night sitting in the waiting room, waiting for news, and finally, a few hours before sunrise, a doctor comes in asking who's family. Almost everyone stands up. Steve steps forward, though. I'm her brother. We're all family. Her mom's trailer was destroyed in the earthquake. No one knows if she's alive or not. He doesn't clarify why they don't have the same mom, and the doctor looks too exhausted to care. The hospital is filled with earthquake victims, and she probably just wants to go home or move on to the next patient. Okay, Max, several of the kids say. Max, the doctor smiles kindly, knowing how important names are probably. It's a lot. She's young and healthy, though, so we're hoping that her body will help her get through this. She's suffered spinal fractures in her arms and legs. It's like someone twisted the bones in two different directions hard enough to break them each into two pieces. We performed surgery, untwisting the bones and setting them with pins so they'll heal in the correct places. Healing is going to be a long, painful process, though. Someone starts to cry. The doctor swallows tightly, clearing her throat and nodding. Her eyes will probably never heal completely, but in time, she may be able to see light and shadows. If, when she wakes up from the coma she's in, her life will never be the same. She's going to need a lot of physical therapy, a lot of support. With hard work, she should make enough of a recovery to someday walk with aids, crutches, a wheelchair for the hard days. She sighs, putting her hand on Steve's arm in comfort. All we can do now is wait. Can we see her? He asks, putting his arm around Lucas, who's crying silently. You and one other person can see her now. The rest of you should go home, sleep, and then come back during visiting hours. You can all see her then. Steve nods to the doctor. She leads the two of them away. There's nothing but heartbroken silence in their wake. About an hour later, Lucas and a shaken, young-looking, because she is, Erica get dropped at home with the promise to pick them back up around noon. Steve had gone in to talk to the Sinclairs for a few minutes. Eddie's not sure what he said to them, but there's no screaming, so it must be reassuring. Once they get to Steve's, everyone else calls home to check in. Steve talks to Claudia Henderson, letting her know that Dustin's just exhausted, they got caught outside during the quake, and Max got badly hurt. Whatever else he must say ends up with Dustin being allowed to stay with them. Nancy and Robin both tell their parents the same story about the quake and that they're at each other's houses for the night. They take turns showering. Eddie is the only one who doesn't have spare clothes at the Harrington residence, which feels meaningful, but Eddie can't hold on to the thought enough to question it. Steve loans him a pair of black sweats and a gray t-shirt, saying it's the closest thing he has to Eddie's personal style. Eddie doesn't mention that he would have gladly worn a Hawkins High basketball uniform if it meant clean clothes. By the time everyone is clean, Steve's got some type of pasta dish ready for them. It's the first thing Eddie's eaten in a week that didn't come out of a can. And it's the first thing he's eaten as a shapeshifter. He's a fucking shapeshifter. What the fuck? The smell of everything is so strong, and there are so many. Everything seems to have a scent. It's giving Eddie a headache, honestly. That could also be because he hasn't slept in a few days, and the sun is almost up. Also, he died. Dustin plops down into a chair next to him. Relax, Eddie. It'll take you a few days to figure out which scents are things and which scents are emotions. It's kind of an overload at first. He piles a ton of the chicken from the pasta dish onto Eddie's plate. And here's a good tip. In our human form, we can eat a lot of things, but meat is super important. You're gonna need more of it than you did before. And avoid raw fruits and veggies. So far, they just make us all sick. Eddie knows he sounds a bit dazed when he replies, "Oh, that explains the potatoes." Across the table, Steve laughs so hard he has to wipe tears out of his eyes. Dustin's eyebrows furrow. He doesn't like being left out. Eddie waves a hand like it's too much right now. Shrugging, Dustin goes back to eating. They don't talk much. Everyone's a little shell-shocked. They just eat in silence and clean up, and then everyone starts shuffling off to bed. Nancy and Robin take the guest bedroom. Eddie just kind of follows Dustin as he heads up the stairs. The room they're in is so plaid and beige. Why? "Eddie," Steve is saying, holding Eddie's hands between them. "There you are. You keep falling asleep on your feet. I've got a bed big enough for two. Dustin's in here too, on the fold-out cot. You okay bunking in my bed with me?" He wants to flirt. Say something snappy to throw Harrington off his game. Something about getting fresh, big boy. But he can't. His body refuses to follow instructions. He just nods and turns to the bed, sliding arms first into the clean smell of it. He's asleep before he even gets all the way into bed. Safe, warm. It's all he feels when he wakes up. Safe and warm. He blinks, lifting his head in a way that feels abnormal but good. Right. Steve. Good morning. Steve. Safe. Pack. Steve smells great. Eddie noses along his cheek, following the scent to his throat to press his nose there and huff. Steve laughs, twisting away, but Eddie chases it. Steve pushes him away and sits up. All right, get off. He laughs, wiping at his neck. You want to see what you look like? Eddie tilts his head, dragging himself paws first to the edge of the bed where Steve is sitting before jumping down. Laughing again, Steve stands up, stretches, and then goes over to his bedroom door, closing it to reveal the mirror on the back. In the mirror is Steve and a jet-black wolf. Unlike the other wolves who have white markings on the cheeks, chests, and underbellies, Eddie is black. All black. It's metal as fuck. He yips, leaping to put his front paws on the mirror. There's a little clack when his nails hit the mirror, and behind him, his tail wags. He turns to watch it and nearly falls over. Steve laughs, running his hand down Eddie's back, scritching as he goes. Wow, that's fucking awesome. No wonder all the wolves let themselves be petted constantly. Behind them, Dustin sits on his cot, rubbing the sleep out of his eyes and grinning his toothy grin, like he's so happy for Eddie. You look badass, right? Eddie makes a little yipping noise in response again. His tail wags again, too, which catches his eye, and he turns to get a closer look at it. And realizes he's chasing his own tail. What the fuck? Steve chuckles, thumping Eddie's flank with the flat of his hand. All right there, big guy. Let me and Dustin out to go start breakfast. Well, brunch, and you can shift whenever you're ready to join us. He goes over to the dresser, pulling out a pair of blue jeans and a pair of underwear. You can pick out your own shirt from my closet. Take all the time you need. Once he's alone, Eddie checks himself out a bit, stretching, jumping up on the bed, laying on the floor, attempting to wag his tail on command. He cannot. That must be an emotion-driven thing for a dog. Unlike last night, his body feels refreshed and healthy. Good. Right. Concentrating, he pulls into his human form, which is, like, so fucking weird still. He can't even think of a better word. Just weird. He's standing in front of the mirror, naked, which is not something he's ever really done before, not having a full-length mirror himself, but he runs his fingers along his sides, where he'd felt the bats digging their hungry mouths, the place on his neck where he knows his air had escaped from, the meat of his thigh where chunks should be missing. It's all smooth, though. Unblemished. Healed. He's still got the scars he had before yesterday, and his human body hasn't changed at all, but he feels different. Stronger. When Eddie finally heads down to the kitchen in Harrington's jeans and a dark green hooded sweatshirt he'd found in the back of Steve's closet, past all the polos and soft sweaters, Steve sidles up close, leaning in, a little too close to be just friendly. Feel free to ask me anything. I've got almost 2 years of trial and error. And yeah, Eddie's got questions, but he's also got questions. Like, do you want to kiss me as much as I want to kiss you, Harrington? He can't ask that now, though. Not sure if he'll ever be ballsy enough to ask that, honestly. Actually, why did I wake up as a wolf this morning? Is that normal? Eddie asks, moving away from Steve reluctantly as he fills his plate with scrambled eggs and bacon, remembering what Dustin said about extra meat. And can I still have coffee? You can have anything you want, it just doesn't all digest as well. Raw fruits and veggies seem to be the worst in general. Cooked is okay, but in small amounts. Stay far away from chocolate. Dustin repeats that mistake too often. Sitting down, Steve points at the kid across the table with his fork, raises his voice a little, because he has no willpower. Fuck you, Steve. Dustin rolls his eyes, but he's blushing. Eddie can hear him grumbling about someone named Dart eating chocolate and being fine. He'll ask him later what chocolate does to them. He's pretty sure it's not a good breakfast topic. And you didn't wake up as a wolf. You're always a wolf, remember? Yeah, Mom, Eddie thinks, but wisely keeps it to himself. Steve lifts an eyebrow like he knows. Does he know? But I think you weren't done healing, so you subconsciously shifted back in order to speed the process. It happens sometimes. It doesn't work the other way, though. Eddie tilts his head in question because his mouth is full and he's too ravenous to stop eating long enough to ask actual questions. We don't accidentally change into our human forms. That takes thought and effort, so we can't do it asleep, or at least no one has had that happen yet. The wolf is our natural state, so it's easier to slip into without meaning to. And what about our coloring? Eddie wonders. Like Dustin, Max, and Lucas make sense. Their main coat color matches their hair color. But you're gray and I'm black. All black with no white markings at all. Steve shrugs. No idea, man. Mike should be black if you go with his hair color, but he's brown too. Different from Lucas and Dustin, though. Huh. Put another tally in the weird column. More than anything, I'm just glad you're not a demodog. We hadn't shifted in the upside down because I wasn't sure what would happen. But Dustin shifted to howl for me, and I shifted to run to him, and we were fine. Steve fades out for a minute, looking down at his plate before glancing back up. And you were too far gone to be moved. Too far gone. Eddie's pretty sure he hadn't been breathing for the last minute or so. Too far gone might be underselling it. Did you know you could do that, Steve? Dustin asks around a mouthful of food. I didn't, Steve admits, pushing his own food around on his plate. Not until that moment, at least. He shrugs. And I'm not sure if it would work on just anyone, or if they have to have been in the upside down. Or if they have to be... dying. Eddie has more questions, but his nose is assaulted with new scents as Robin and Nancy both come into the kitchen. Steve and Dustin both look at him with knowing looks. He wants to... God, this is so weird. Is that what you meant? Yesterday, about needing to mark us? Eddie's a little outraged because never in his life has he wanted to rub up against girls, and here he is wanting to do it to two of them. And was that only yesterday? Jesus. Excuse you, we don't need any of you dogs rubbing your gross selves on us before breakfast. Lunch, Robin informs them, loading her plate with fruit and the pancakes Steve made for them. She absolutely downs them in syrup, and when she walks past Eddie, he breathes her in and hears himself whine. Dustin giggles, eyes alight with mischief, and Eddie thinks that Dustin's going to go for Nancy as soon as she gets settled into the chair next to him. Nancy puts her small hand out before Dustin has a chance, though. Don't you dare. You can mark us before we leave for the hospital. Eddie snorts. Steve stays wisely quiet. Robin is already talking an endless stream about something that Eddie can't even keep up with as she shovels pancakes into her mouth between long paragraphs of information. All he can think about is how unprotected both girls are and how much he needs to fix it. On their way out the front door 30 minutes later, both girls come to a standstill, almost resigned. Dustin waves Eddie toward Nancy, who smiles primly and opens her arms. He hugs her, burying his face into her poofy hair and making sure that his arms rub her arms and back. He feels so much better now. When he releases her, Steve's still got Robin tucked under his chin. She's squawking, but her scent... You smell like love and trust, Eddie realizes, like that's not insane. But Steve smiles all warm and content, dipping down to brush the tip of his nose against her temple, kissing it after. She does. When he releases her, she smacks his arm and pretends to pull away, but doesn't. They're somber at the hospital, all the playfulness of the morning gone in the stark reality of Max being so broken still. Lucas and Erica are already there. Mrs. Sinclair brought them so she could pop in to check on Max as well before leaving them there. Eddie'd entered the hospital by the front door this time, hidden in plain sight as a guide dog. Steve brought a backpack with his clothes so Eddie could shift back into human form once he was safely in Max's room. There are probably too many of them in the room at once, but the staff is busy, so they don't notice. Steve and Lucas steal a few extra chairs from the waiting room, so there's enough of them for the seven of them to sit down. Erica is busy braiding Max's hair and talking to her softly. Eddie somehow feels Mike getting closer, but he doesn't mention it, knows the rest of the wolves feel it too. Remembers that Mike will know where to find them when he gets back to Hawkins. There's no change with Max. The tether that connects Eddie to Steve and the others isn't there with Max. Her body is empty of the things that make her Max. Even though he wasn't connected to her before she was gone, Eddie can still feel the disconnect. It hurts, aches. It's hollow, like something dug her out and stole her. Because something did. Someone. They stay there all day, taking turns leaving for food and going to stretch their legs. Hawkins is split like a cracked pumpkin, guts spilling out all over downtown. On their way over this morning, they had passed the high school. It looked like it was being used as a relief center. Nancy made a comment that if they were like everyone else, maybe they'd be helping. But Max is in the hospital, Eddie'd almost died, and part of their group is still disconnected from them. No way are they going to make PB&Js like nothing happened. There's plenty of other able-bodied volunteers. Eddie agrees, plus most of this town tried to hunt him down like a dog, which is ironic considering his current state, so he's disinclined to hand out used sweaters and juice boxes. He wishes he knew where Wayne was, though. Misses his uncle so badly he almost can't stand it. "You okay?" Dustin asks quietly, leaning into Eddie's arm with his own. The touch is grounding. Probably another wolf thing. Everyone else is having their own quiet conversations, so Eddie sighs. "Just wish I knew where my uncle was. Want to make sure he's safe. Make sure..." "He knows I didn't kill Chrissy," Eddie doesn't say, because he can't. He'll cry if he does. Wayne has loved Eddie through so much, he hates that he's had to weather all of this alone. And part of him is afraid that this will be the time that Wayne decides Eddie isn't worth it anymore. "I saw him," Nancy says softly from across the room. She misses nothing, of course. "You did? When?" Eddie perks up. Before Fred died. I was asking questions about Chrissy. Had a feeling it was the Upside Down somehow." She smiles gently. "He never believed you were guilty, not even for a second. Said you wouldn't hurt a fly." And Eddie can't really be blamed for breaking down. He had shoved it to the back of his mind while he dealt with everything else, but Wayne believing that he'd killed someone had haunted him the whole time. So, of course, hearing that he was still loved by the only parent that had ever really loved him, of course he fucking cries. There's a rustle of movement, and he's surrounded. Wolves and humans, all crowded around him, touching him, soothing him. From near the hospital bed, Erica says, "Don't expect me to come over there. I do not like to be touched, and a group hug is my worst nightmare." Eddie laughs wetly. Robin, too. Lucas rolls his eyes and looks apologetic. Everyone moves back to their places, except Steve, who nudges Dustin away and takes the vacated seat next to Eddie. Presses his knee to Eddie's. "We could find him for you." Sniffling, Eddie shakes his head. "After we kill that motherfucker and get Max back. I don't want to drag him into something. I'd rather he be safe." Steve nods. Gets it, has probably left people in the dark himself. Which, actually, now that Eddie's thinking clearly, where were your parents last night? Steve's uncomfortable. Eddie can smell it or sense it somehow. He's not sure, but it's not good. He stammers out something about Steve not having to tell him, but Steve shushes him. "It's fine, man. They don't come to Hawkins often. My dad's practice is in Chicago now, real estate law. My mom went back to her career about the same time I started high school. She runs an ad agency in Chicago as well. They have an apartment there, used to come home once every few months, then just on major holidays. I haven't seen them since my high school graduation." "Steve, what the fuck?" Steve gives him a wry, sad-looking smile. "It's fine. My only complaint is that they won't let me excavate the pool." That throws Eddie off. Wait, the captain of the swim team doesn't want the pool in his backyard? Again, Nancy pipes up. Her voice is sad, though, weighed down with what sounds like guilt. "You remember Barb Holland?" And Eddie does. It dawns on him suddenly that Wheeler and Barb were best friends. He'd seen Wheeler waiting outside of the band room for Barb a bunch of times back when he was a junior. Yeah, we had band together. Let me guess, it wasn't actually a chemical leak. Steve and Nancy stare at each other, share the same look of loss. Then Nancy says in a faraway voice, "A Demogorgon killed her in the upside-down version of Steve's pool." Bracing herself, she whispers, "She's probably still there." Oh, shit. After that, they purposefully talk of unimportant things. School, people they all know, Lady Applejack's new role-playing skills. She scoffs, but Eddie can somehow tell she loves the praise. How does he know that? Is it like how animals smell fear? Can they smell all emotions? Maybe? He's got an ever-growing list of questions for Harrington. They avoid the windows and the view of devastation outside. It's late, maybe about an hour before visiting hours are over, when the door swings open. Mike Wheeler walks in with a girl with a shaved head, wearing all white, who must be their Supergirl, Elle. They're followed by a taller, ganglier Will Byers than Eddie remembers from the posters, though with the same haircut, which is unfortunate. A few steps behind them is Jonathan Byers and some guy with really awesome hair. Supergirl looks devastated and has eyes for no one but Max, making a beeline straight for her, tears already falling. The home team steps away, letting the California crew crowd around Max, touching her hands and her cheeks. After a long while, the girl, Elle, approaches Steve, standing expectantly in front of him. Putting his hands on Elle's shoulders, Steve says, "It's like she's empty. Even her wolf is gone. That's how she feels to us. Is that how she feels to you?" Sniffling, she nods before leaning into Steve's shoulder. She sobs there, heartbroken and lost, looking so very young. "I couldn't save her in time, Steve. She's trapped, I think." "We'll get her back, Elle. Everything will be okay. We just need to know where to find her," Steve promises, in the way that only Steve Harrington can promise the impossible and make you believe that he'll deliver. "He has her soul," Elle says softly, but there's so much strength in it. "Henry, he told me that when he kills people, he gets stronger, absorbs them. But I brought her body back to life. If we can kill him, maybe I can take her soul back." The nurse comes in a few minutes later, shocked at how many of them there are, but still apologizing for kicking them all out. She promises to call if there's any change, tells them that they all look like they need rest too, and they can come back in smaller groups tomorrow. They sneak Eddie out again, and this time, everyone reconvenes in Loch Nora at Steve's. As soon as they're all inside, Mike throws himself at Eddie, hugging him tightly in a way that he never would have before this all started. So much for these kids having a respectful fear of him. "Man, I felt you become a wolf. How are you even here? What the hell happened?" So they catch the Cali group up. Then Elle catches them up. It seems she was working behind the scenes, but also fighting an insane battle of her own. She took down a helicopter and piggybacked on their plan from a pizza dough freezer filled with salt water. Eddie has some questions. They give him and Argyle a quick catch-up, lingering most on the details about Elle's memories of the lab and Henry, because everyone needs that update. Once they settle back down, Mike turns to him. "So, can I see your wolf?" Eddie goes up to Steve's room to take off his clothes. It already doesn't feel strange to do that. When he races back down the stairs on four legs, Mike and Will both exclaim over him, giving him pets and scratches. Why the fuck does that feel so amazing? And not like people are touching his naked back. It's not like that at all. His wolf form is so different that his mind just doesn't think of it that way. Mike says, "That's so fucking cool. Wanna see mine?" Eddie can't answer, but he gives a little yip and tilts his head curiously. While Mike's out of the room shifting, Eddie feels compelled to mark the rest of their party. He's never even met Will before today, but he rubs up against his legs anyway. Fucking instincts. He gets Jonathan, Elle, and Argyle, too. Argyle smells like the most amazing weed ever, and Eddie wonders briefly if he can still get high. Mike comes out of the downstairs bathroom as a brown and white wolf. He's almost as tall as Eddie, but more delicate-looking. He's got some black markings around his neck and on his back, but he's mostly brown, except his cheeks and underbelly where he's white. Mike licks his cheek, doing that little chortle thing where they all sound like they're laughing. Then he runs around rubbing himself on everyone, but especially Nancy and Elle, before heading back to the bathroom to shift back. Eddie gallops up the stairs to shift too. When bedtime rolls around, no one wants to separate really. They pull the mattresses off the beds and haul them downstairs into the den, making one large sleeping pad. Steve's got this monstrous sectional couch, and when Eddie asks about it, he shrugs and says the den was his hangout space. He wasn't allowed to have his friends in the living room, so his parents made this space so the entire team could hang out. Which, gross, jocks, but comes in handy for the party. He knows the boys have always called just the four of them the party, but Eddie has decreed that the party now refers to everyone involved in the upside-down bullshit. There's some scrunching and overlapping, but all four girls fit on the couches with their pillows and blankets. Steve goes upstairs to change and comes back in wolf form. Lucas, Dustin, and Mike follow suit. Eddie figures he might as well join them. Argyle is over the moon about it, wants to pet every one of them an equal amount, but they keep moving, so he has to start over several times. Eddie can feel the void where Max should be, like a raw wound. He knows they'll need to make a plan tomorrow. He heard Nancy say something about fixing up Hop's old cabin as a base of operations because it's out in the middle of the woods. Eddie Munson at a cop's house. Wild. He's lulled to sleep by the sounds of people and wolves breathing and snoring all around him. They divide and conquer the next day. Nancy and Robin left early to take Elle and Lucas to the hospital as soon as visiting hours started, with a promise to meet the rest of them at the cabin after they've checked in on her. Jonathan and the new guy take the rest of the kids out to Hop's old cabin, while Steve and Eddie go to the trailer park to salvage what they can from Max and hopefully Eddie's trailers. Dustin tries to go with them, but Steve tells him no, takes him aside and tells him he wants two wolves in their group, just in case. Dustin concedes, but he grumbles about it all the way out the door. It's not until the door clicks shut behind him that Eddie realizes this is the first time he's been alone with Steve since the boathouse. And Steve was a dog then. Wolf. It's actually the only time they've ever been alone and both human-ish. And they've been getting into each other's personal space for weeks now. And Steve could apparently smell how he really felt when he was bitching about Steve Harrington to a stray mutt. Eddie's sure that Steve is going to want to talk, but he just grabs his keys and a box of trash bags to stuff their things into and tells Eddie to come on as he heads out the front door. "Remind me to grab real music if my trailer isn't totally destroyed," Eddie says, once they're driving and Steve's got Duran Duran playing on the stereo in the Beamer. "This is real music. What you listen to isn't real music. It's just screeching and banging on drums." Steve says it with a straight face, but somehow Eddie knows he's lying. "How do I know you're lying?" Eddie asks. And then, "And why are you lying?" Laughing loudly as he takes another back road to avoid being seen by anyone with pitchforks or a badge, Steve says, "When people lie, their heartbeat goes up and they sweat. Their smell goes just a little off, almost like milk just before it goes sour, you know?" Eddie does, and ew, gross. You'll notice a difference when emotions color their scent, and after a while, you'll be able to recognize what those emotions are. Like with Erica yesterday. She was proud when they complimented her, and Eddie knew, even though she was pretending it was no big deal. He thinks he's starting to get the hang of it. Everyone has a base scent of their own, but it changes when their chemistry changes. It's not that emotions have scents at all. It's tiny little changes in each scent, like layers of scent. This is bonkers. His life is just bonkers. "And I lied to see if you would be able to sniff it out. I like some metal," Steve says with a little smirk, adding, "like the ballads." Of course he does. Steve seems like a ballad type of guy, but Eddie clutches his pearls anyway and exclaims, "Steve Harrington, I'm shocked." And he is. Steve Harrington likes at least a little metal. What is the world coming to? And, well, that's the question of the week, isn't it? As it turns out, they can't even get into the trailer park. It's surrounded by government vehicles, and there's a giant crack in the earth that Eddie is pretty sure is a gate big enough to sink the Titanic in. The front half of Eddie's trailer looks like it became one leg of the gate, but the back half looks like it must have caught on fire at some point. There's nothing left of his bedroom but the charred husk of the frame. Steve turns the car around and starts heading out to the woods where Hopper's cabin must be. After a minute of silence, Steve reaches over, lacing his fingers with Eddie's. He doesn't say anything at first, and he doesn't take his eyes off the road, just holds Eddie's hand while Eddie tries not to cry again. "I'm sorry, Eddie. With the way it was starting to crack when we escaped, I had hoped that your bedroom at least had been spared." He says it softly between song changes on the cassette he's got playing. "It was so much cooler than my room." Eddie had forgotten that Steve had been in his bedroom. As Strider, he'd gone in and sniffed around to check on Eddie to see who he really was. Eddie starts to giggle, high and a little manic. It develops into a full-on belly laugh. When he looks at Steve, Steve's looking back at him with a worried expression. "Sorry, man. I was just thinking that Strider had been all over my trailer checking me out, and then I remembered you'd stuck your nose where it definitely didn't belong." He laughs again, tears at the corner of his eyes, thinking of the offended look on Strider's face when he'd gotten a nose full of jizz-stained tissues. "Oh," Steve says, and he's blushing. Cheeks, ears, even his throat. "Yeah, sorry about that." "You're sorry," Eddie exclaims as his laughs start to peter off. "I'm sorry." "No, really, it's my fault. I barged in and got all up in your business without you knowing it was me." Steve ducks his head sheepishly. "I shouldn't have stayed past that first night." Are they finally doing this then? Having this talk about what that was all about? Eddie shifts in his seat again to stare at Steve, at the blush creeping up again. When Steve glances over at him, Eddie lifts an eyebrow like, "The floor is yours." Clearing his throat a little, Steve says, "I don't know if it's clear to you or not, but I like you." Eddie's gay little heart spins around and shouts, "Wee!" He stays cool on the outside, though, letting Steve continue. "You're confusing, though. You smelled attracted to me, but you also smell like you hated me." Steve's hands tighten on the wheel as he turns onto some back road that's barely a dirt road. He doesn't look at Eddie as he continues. "I figured I must have done something to you, in high school, to make you feel that way, but I don't remember it, I'm sorry." Eddie sighs deeply, tugs on a lock of his hair. "You didn't, I avoided you in high school." Letting go of his hair to instead spin one of his rings around on the hand in his lap, Eddie swears under his breath. Okay. So, when you were in 7th and I was in 8th, we had homeroom together." He looks down at his fidgeting hands because he can't bear to look at Steve for this part. "I was new, sat in the back most of the time, trying to blend in, but, God, I wanted you to notice me so bad. One day, I did it, I sat right behind you. Borrowed a pencil because I couldn't think of another way to talk to you." He huffs out a breath. "After class, I followed you to your locker to give it back, and a couple of your friends came up behind me, shoulder-checking me hard enough that I fell into you. I made the mistake of blushing." Eddie opens his hands up in an echo of the defeat he felt all those years ago. "They noticed. One of them called me a queer, which was true, even if I hadn't thought about myself that way yet, and it stuck. Queer, fairy, freak, fag. I never really had a chance to figure myself out because it sort of happened right there and then." The irony of wearing Steve's clothes while telling this story is not lost on Eddie as he stuffs his hands in the front pocket of Steve Harrington's borrowed sweatshirt. He laughs softly, admitting, "So, what did you do to me?" "Nothing. You just left me there, still holding the borrowed pencil. I had my first crush, got outed, gay panicked, and had my heart broken, all between first and second period on a Tuesday morning." At some point during Eddie's story, Steve had stopped the car in the road. "Shit," he swears, leaning back in his seat, letting his head thunk against the headrest. "That boy was you. Your head was shaved, yeah?" Eddie nods. He hadn't expected Steve to remember. "Yeah. My dad said long hair was for girls. Shaving my head was one of his parting gifts." "Damn it. I remember it. Thought about it a lot lately, actually." Steve sighs, looking down for a moment before looking at Eddie, breath shaky. A friend of mine came out to me last year, and when that happened, I thought about that moment, about how I felt sweaty and awkward when this guy with these big brown eyes asked to borrow my pencil. It was my only one, but I gave it to him anyway. And then he, you, at my locker. He laughs hollowly. I didn't know boys could have such pretty eyes. Eddie doesn't say anything, because it looks like Steve isn't done yet. He's glancing out the window, tapping his knuckles on the window well. The air smells a little like salt, and Eddie can't figure out why. Tommy said that word, and I'd heard the other boys saying it. I knew it was bad, knew it was something to avoid, something I wasn't supposed to be. Steve's hands drop into his lap. He turns his head back to Eddie, blinking back unshed tears, and Eddie realizes he could smell them, the tears. I couldn't be something wrong. My dad, it couldn't be about me, that word. So I got scared, stuffed it in a box and buried it deep, pretended I'd never seen it, never seen you, pretended it didn't have anything to do with me, convinced myself to forget about it so well that I did, until last year. Took me a few months after my friend came out to get the courage to take that box back out, but when I did, with a little self-deprecating laugh, Steve says, I'm sorry that I let that happen to you, or maybe that I didn't just let it happen to both of us, that I didn't stop them all the times my friends called you or anyone names. I'm sorry for most of who I was back then. He runs a hand through his perfect hair and turns his body toward Eddie, meeting his eyes with determination. Most of all, I'm sorry I didn't realize that you were the boy with the pretty eyes, or I'd have come to apologize. I thought about it, you, a lot. Wished I'd been brave enough to stay. There's a few seconds, just a few, mind you, where Eddie is utterly speechless. Then he reaches over and hauls Steve closer by his polo. They meet kind of in the middle since Eddie is rushing to get there too. Did you just tell me that I was your gay awakening at the same time that you were my gay awakening? Steve's eyes are wide and confused, but he's not stopping Eddie, not even pushing him off. Bisexual, but yeah, yes. Eddie has no idea if that change in scent is fear or something else, but he knows it's not a lie, because he knows what a lie smells like now when Steve Harrington tells one. Fuck it. He closes the last few inches between them, kissing Steve. It's not a good kiss, because Steve's mouth is still slightly open in shock, and Eddie's freaking out a little bit. He starts to pull back, embarrassed, but Steve finally comes to life, sliding one arm around Eddie to pull him close, while the other slides up under his hair to cup the back of his head, pulling Eddie into his arms as much as the middle console will allow. It's softer, sweeter this time. Just lips and gentle intentions. Like they're both making up for a first kiss they didn't get to share when they were young and untouched by the hate of the world yet. This time, when Steve starts to pull back, it's Eddie who pulls him back in, whining softly. Steve leans into it, easing past Eddie's lips with his tongue. Letting go of Steve's shirt, Eddie slides his hands up in Steve's hair, reveling at how the smooth strands curl around his fingers. By the time they both pull back, their lips are a little swollen, faces flushed, and they're both gasping a little for air.
Maybe we should...
Both laughing, Steve recovers first. We should go. They know we're here, and if we take too long... At the same time, they both say, Dustin. When Steve pulls his car in behind Nancy's and the pizza van, everyone is out front. Everyone, including Chief Hopper and Joyce Byers. Eddie looks at Steve in shock. Didn't the chief die? So did you, Steve retorts, shrugging. He's shrugging, but there's something about the line of his shoulders, the set of his teeth, that tells Eddie that his near death is a much bigger issue than the joke Steve's making of it, and that he doesn't want to talk about it. Eddie doesn't either. The list of things he's going to discuss later is growing in leaps and bounds. Once they climb out of the car and head over to the group, Joyce Byers practically tackles Steve in a hug. And when a grinning Chief Hopper reaches over her head to get his hands on Steve too, she ducks under his arm and pulls a surprised Eddie into a hug. It's an incredibly surreal experience. She's tiny, but he can feel how fierce she is. how she must sink her teeth in and refuse to let go of what's hers. It's also the first time a mother has hugged him since his own drove off into the sunset more than 7 years ago. Embarrassingly, he starts to cry. "I'm sorry, I don't..." "Shush now," she admonishes, holding him tighter. "I got you. I'm here." It makes no sense why that's reassuring. Eddie knows a superhero, a pack of shape-shifting wolves, the fiercest band nerd of all time, Nancy Wheeler and her shotgun, and Steve, I will bludgeon you to death with my nail bat, Harrington, but this delicate 40-year-old woman makes him feel safer than almost anything in the world. After longer than he wants to admit, he finally lets go, swiping at his wet cheeks and laughing quietly. She cups his cheek, swiping her thumb along it a few times before she lets him go. There's another catch-up session, this time with the three sides of what is ultimately the same coin. California, Hawkins, and fucking Russia. Russia again. He should probably move that question to the top of the list. The group had only skimmed over it last night, deeming it a side quest rather than part of the real campaign. When ash starts to fall from the sky a few hours later, everyone almost looks resigned. And when they walk into the edge of the woods to look out over Hawkins, seeing pillars of smoke rising from the cracks, red light crackling inside them ominously, no one looks surprised. Steve slips his hands into Eddie's, curling their fingers together. Eddie leans against his shoulder, watches everyone do the same with whoever is standing next to them. Elle steps out in front, away from Will and Mike, crouches down to brush her fingers over a flower that turns to ash in her hand. If Eddie were DMing this, this is where he'd say something prophetic, something that ties all the battles they've fought into the final one they're headed into. But this is real. There's nothing to say in this eerie silence that stretches out as they watch darkness fill the sky. End of chapter 5.